Welcome back. This is now episode 5 of Uncapped. If you listened to the last episode, our Studio Ghibli episode, guest starring D. Will, thank you for listening and welcome back to this week's episode. This is my, I want to say, third time trying to record this. So for the sake of my sanity, I hope this is what you're listening slash viewing. So please pray. Speaking of viewing, if you can tell, if you have eyes that work, we have video now, got a little backdrop behind me. If you see some bad movies such as The Rise of Skywalker, please don't pay any attention. I know that movie is horrible, but I needed a backdrop. That was a poster that filled the space, so what can you do? I'm pretty excited for today's episode, so since it's kind of the end of the month, I think something fun we can do we can kind of go over my top 4 Letterboxd watches of the month. If you know Letterboxd, you know that it's the top 4 movies, and if you know me, you know I'm addicted to Letterboxd, so I feel like this would be a fun episode. I watched a lot of movies this month, again, post-grad life, got a lot of time on my hands after work, so been watching a lot of good things. Before we dive into the segment, I kind of want to go over some movie news. So first and foremost, Snow White came out last week, and apparently it was a major flop. I'm a certified Rachel Zegler hater, so I'm not too disappointed to hear that news. I think she is a Disney PR team's worst nightmare. She can't be trusted in front of a mic, in front of a live audience, so I guess that's what we call karma. With how she basically sank her own movie with all the press surrounding it. I also heard that the CGI was horrible. I didn't see that with my own two eyes because I will not be seeing this movie. But apparently it was a major flop for Disney. It was one of the worst they've ever had. I think it had the lowest IMDb rating ever. So sorry to the fans that were looking forward to that. I'm so glad that Rachel Zegler did not trash The Ballad of Songbird and Snakes, the Hunger Games prequel that came out, I want to say, a year or two ago. Thank God she didn't ruin that, since I am a major Hunger Games fan. That would have really upset me. Also, since I've been kind of giving recommendations with what to watch that's not on theme with every week's episode theme, not that it's a recommendation since we're going over 4 random movies today, but yesterday I did see A24's newest movie, Death of a Unicorn, starring Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. It was mid. It was pretty mid. I gave it 3 stars on Letterboxd. Don't get me wrong, it was funny, had a lot of one-liners in there. I love Paul Rudd. Also, the plot was pretty unique. I was excited to see that. Just overall, there were some plot points that were questionable. Same thing with some CGI. The last 15 minutes just had me thinking, what the fuck am I watching this whole time? But it was definitely entertaining. There was more gore than I expected. So it was a fun watch. Probably not a watch that you should sit through sober, but fun nonetheless. Not that it was great, but fun. Let's get into today's episode. So, as I just said before, every episode at the end of the month, I want to get into my top 4 Letterboxd movies, and I watched a lot of great things this month. So, in no particular order, let's just go over some of the movies I watched, and I feel like I kind of want to start with There Will Be Blood. That was great. There Will Be Blood is a Western thriller by Paul Thomas Anderson. Came out in 2007, I want to say, starring Daniel Day-Lewis and Frank Dano. If anyone knows anything about this movie, you know that it was a great Western thriller. If not, I'll just give a little rough overview of the plot. So Daniel Day-Lewis is the star. He plays Daniel Plainview, who is a former silver miner turned oil prospector. And he and his adopted son, H.W. Plainview, they go and purchase this property, kind of rips off the people whose property it's owned by in order to drill for oil, make money. Daniel Day-Lewis is an oil man, and Eli Sunday, whose family owns that property, he kind of sees the con man of Daniel Day-Lewis's character, Daniel Plainview, and that leads to a slow-burning feud that threatens both of their lives. This movie was great. I don't think I've ever seen a movie like this, especially in terms of a Western. I would say the first act was definitely more on the Western side, and then as we kind of got to the middle of the movie, it definitely dives a lot deeper into a thriller, which I thought was really fun. It had me on the edge of my seat for most of the time. I will say that if Daniel Day-Lewis wasn't the main character in this movie, I don't know if this movie would have hit as hard for me. I think he's phenomenal. I mean, the guy has won 3 Academy Awards. Even while the storyline was phenomenal, same thing with the soundtrack, score, editing. If Daniel Day-Lewis wasn't the lead, I just don't think this movie would have been as awesome as it was. He really just embodied that money-hungry oil prospector of the early 20th century. It was awesome. He did a great job. No wonder why he won the Academy Award for that. He just made that movie for me. And then in terms of the cast as well, I think Frank Dano definitely deserves more credit for this movie. While Daniel Day-Lewis, like I keep saying, just went on to win the Academy Award, Frank Dano wasn't even nominated. He definitely deserves more praise to hang in with Daniel Day-Lewis, especially when this is your, second blockbuster movie? I would say his first was probably Little Miss Sunshine. He did a great job in order to hang in there. He definitely embodied the role of Eli Sunday, a preacher in California, very well. It was an amazing job, well done. Also, a little fun fact, while we're just talking about the cast and crew, Daniel Day-Lewis, him and the director have worked together on several films, and 2 out of the 3 Academy Awards that Daniel Day-Lewis won, Paul Thomas Anderson was also the director for those 2 movies, which is pretty cool. Like I said, soundtrack gets your heart racing, blood pumping. With a thriller, it's very important to have a soundtrack that kind of amplifies the heart racing that you're supposed to feel while watching this movie and the storyline unfold. And There Will Be Blood, the soundtrack did just that. It was awesome. Also, the directing, the color tones, I thought he did a great job. I love when directors kind of highlight a certain image with warmer or cooler tones depending on the movie. So, for example, I feel like the rest of the movie was pretty gray, pretty grim, a lot of neutral colors. And then with the fire explosion early on in the movie, the vibrance of the fire color, that really brought that to life for me. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great job. I had a lot of fun watching it. Another thing that I loved, especially with Daniel Day-Lewis's character in the beginning, as he is trying to purposely portray this image of a family man and a happy oil man, as the movie and the storyline unfolds, he goes from kind of a warmer character to just really turning into an asshole as the oil prospector lifestyle takes over him, just money hungry, power hungry, all of that. And he ends up just a miserable ass at the end of this movie. And same thing with him and Eli Sunday, aka Frank Dano's character. That was just great to see him unfold. He was just preaching the whole time, do the right thing. He really gave Daniel Day-Lewis's character a lot of shit for being a sinner. And then at the end, I think it really came full circle how Eli Sunday was after some oil money at the end too, and then how their just story unfolded with this violence. I thought that was great. I really liked this movie. I thought it was a job well done from everyone. I think that if you like a thriller, don't be deterred that I said Western, because it was just phenomenal. I mean, it was a Western in terms of the time period, but overall, that was a thriller movie and it was great. I gave that movie 5 stars on Letterboxd. Phenomenal. If you're into that, especially with a unique plot, because I don't think I've ever seen an oil mining movie like that, or ever, I think that's a great watch for anyone. So definitely check that out. Now for our second movie. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I am a Bong Joon-ho fan. I think his directing is one of my favorites. I think just the stories that he brings to life for his American movies and his South Korean movies are amazing. Don't get me wrong, I'm definitely not a fan or as much of a fan of every single movie. Like, I don't really love The Host or Snowpiercer as much as Memories of Murder or Parasite, but this movie I watched was phenomenal. This is our second movie of this episode that I want to talk about. 2009 Bong Joon-ho thriller crime movie, Mother. Just first and foremost for the plot, a mother and her son are just plunged into a nightmare as the son in their small South Korean town, he is disabled. He is the prime suspect for a murder of a young girl in this town. While the legal system fails the main character, his mother, she takes matters into her own hands, and the rest of the movie is kind of her going on this hunt for evidence to prove her son's innocence. Just on a personal level with the plot, I'm not a mother, but I feel like any mother, especially my mother, would totally do the same thing. So I feel like that kind of takes an emotional aspect for this movie as well, which I think is phenomenal. Also, in terms of crime, I feel like it really, sometimes in a crime movie, I feel like in the beginning is kind of the strongest part, and then it kind of dies out and you're just like, all right, I'm over this. But this movie was amazing. It did not do that. It kind of just had you on the edge of your seat from beginning to end. Even the directing style too, the film editing. Editing is so important in a movie. It pieces the storyline together. Poor editing can lead to a poor movie, regardless of the screenplay and the director and the cast. Editing is very, very important. So I think Bong Joon-ho's editing was amazing. I also like his use of the cooler tones in the camera work. I think the movie was another one that was kind of very grim with darker tones for the overall vibe, the crime of the movie. The cast was phenomenal as well. I do not know this other woman's work, but the lead role who played the mother did a job well done. I mean, she was our star. She was Mother. It was amazing. I think that she made this movie. I looked her up, and she's a very successful South Korean actress, so apparently she was the perfect choice. But this movie was very, very gripping. It had me, especially with that plot right in the beginning, and just the journey for the mother to try and prove her son's innocence. Obviously, there are some times where there's setbacks, but overall, there was a plot twist at the end too. That was amazing. It was just exciting from beginning to end. I don't think there was a dull moment. And we did talk about international films, and this was an international film. So don't be discouraged, because this movie was truly amazing. I had a great time watching it. And anyone that's a fan of crime thriller, this movie is definitely for you. I gave this movie 4.5 stars. I think that I could have given it 5 stars. I don't know why I gave it 4.5, to be honest, but it was great. I had a great time watching. It was awesome. And if you're into thriller crime, that's definitely the movie for you. Mother was amazing. And I mean, with a Bong Joon-ho movie, you're probably going to get a good time. And Mother was a fun watch for sure, especially for our crime fans. So once again, like I said in our international episode, if you can sit through SVU, the same vibe, for 40-minute episodes every single episode, you can sit through 2 hours of a Bong Joon-ho masterpiece, even though you'll have to read subtitles, unless you speak South Korean. I don't know. But that was our second movie of the month. So now we're kind of getting down to the wire, and I know I said no particular order for these movies, but honestly, these last two might have been my favorites. They're just the kind of movies that you sit and think about after they've wrapped up, and I had a great time indulging. For our third movie, our third Letterboxd movie that we're discussing in this episode, this is a 5-star movie in my opinion. Honestly, I would say this is one of the greatest films of all time. Came out in 1984 by Milos Forman. Amadeus, some of you have probably seen. It is regarded as one of the greatest movies of all time. It is in the drama and musical category. So just a rough overview of the plot for our friends that don't know. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart is a remarkably talented young composer who finds a fierce rival in the disciplined and determined Salieri, who is played by F. Murray Abrams, and resenting Mozart for his lifestyle, even though he has undeniable talent, is highly religious Salieri is gradually consumed by this jealousy and becomes obsessed with Mozart's downfall, leading to a devious scheme that has dire consequences on both men. First impressions of this movie, honestly, even though it is a drama, it was hysterical to me. And it's not over-the-top humor, it's just subtle and satirical-like humor, and that's the best type. Who doesn't love a little one-liner here and there that just has you let out a little chuckle? It was awesome. And honestly, for a Mozart biopic, this could have taken so many different routes, but it was perfect. It was more just about the ordinary man, Salieri, who is the narrator of this film, this ordinary man who's in Mozart's close proximity. He's smart enough to recognize Mozart's talent, and he's also smart enough to recognize that he'll never measure up to Mozart, which I think is very, very human, honestly. I'm sure there's been a time in our lives where we've ever felt that we're not good enough to someone sitting next to us, and I think that this narration kind of also has a little emotional depth to it. It makes you feel for Salieri, and it makes you think on your own life a little bit. As far as entertainment, I read a lot of reviews. Some people said that they didn't get the hype. They thought it was boring, but I thought this was so entertaining. And one reason why it was so entertaining, honestly, is because of this music. The classical music, we see Mozart performing the operas multiple times. You're just filled with this wave of 17th, 18th century music. Could be wrong, even though I'm a history major. That's bad to say. But anyway, the music was so much fun. You find yourself tapping your foot, bopping your head. It's classical music, but it just brings the story to life. Obviously, with a Mozart feature, you're gonna get some music, but just the way they did it, you are just transported back to that time period. It was awesome. And another way how you're transported back to this time period is just the costume and set design. Oh my gosh. It was outrageous. It was amazing. The wigs, the set design, the theater, the opera, just everything. I felt like I was looking at a history book watching it. It was amazing. The cast did phenomenal. F. Murray Abraham, who plays Salieri, who's our lead, our narrator, he actually won the Academy Award for this. He was fantastic. You just feel for him. In a way, I mean, he perfectly embodies this role of one man's all-consuming jealousy of another's talents, and he just portrayed it brilliantly. It was a saga of envy and tragedy that F. Murray Abraham brought to life, and that was definitely one of the best acting performances I've seen in a long time. Even, I can't remember his name right now, but even who played Mozart, he did a great job. The only thing that I hated, but I'm sure it was on purpose, was his laugh. He could have played Joker, but that was definitely an issue for my ears. Anyway, this movie just showed off some of the best editing, directing, cinematography, production design, screenplay, just everything. It was brilliant, just in the sense of Mozart. Again, like, some people might find that boring, but this was beyond entertaining. And little fun fact for our Sex and the City friends, we have a young Cynthia Nixon, aka Miranda Hobbs, is featured in this movie. So that was a little fun cameo for everyone. But also, I want to discuss some of my favorite scenes. I just love this movie. So the scene where Salieri is sitting up all night with Mozart to assist him in writing what'll be his final piece, that's just a very moving and heartbreaking part of the film. I feel like it comes very full circle, because you just see Salieri, who a man who spends this whole film talking about his envy and, I guess, jealousy, and his obsession, honestly, for Mozart's talent, a talent that he refers to as God's instrument or God's gift. He becomes an extension of Mozart and that very talent by helping him write that piece, and it's very powerful. I also loved the restored third act of the movie. That's probably one of the best parts for me. It was so entertaining, and if anyone's seen that movie, you probably know what I'm talking about. But I feel like that's also where we get that true clash of rivalry, because throughout the entire movie, F. Murray Abraham, aka Salieri, is talking about his envy and jealousy towards Mozart, but Mozart knows he's the best. He doesn't really pay it any mind until that restored third act part, not quite exactly the third act, but around that area is where that mutual rivalry, I feel like, takes place. So Amadeus was amazing. I thought it was great and honestly one of the best movies I've ever seen. It was 3 hours long. I watched the director's cut, so definitely a longer watch. But if anyone's in the mood for, I don't want to say life-changing movie, but a fantastic movie, it's worth your time for sure. So now for our final movie of this episode that I want to talk about, our final Letterboxd movie, another 5-star movie from me. This is referred to as a classic, came out in 1979, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. And if you listen to my Studio Ghibli episode, it was also my recommendation in the beginning of the episode that I gave. This movie is Apocalypse Now. Fantastic. 5 stars from me. So let's just get into the plot before we get into, again, the directing, my first impressions, just all of it. So a little rough overview. This is set in Vietnam. This is a war/horror movie, but we'll get into that. In Vietnam, 1970, Captain Willard, aka Martin Sheen, takes an increasingly hallucinatory journey upriver to find and terminate Colonel Kurtz, aka Marlon Brando, a once promising officer who has reportedly gone completely mad. And Robert Sheen, he is in the company of Navy Patrol boat filled with street smart kids, which a young Lawrence Fishburne is in this movie, a surfing obsessed air cavalry officer, Robert Duvall, and a crazed freelance photographer, Dennis Hopper, stacked cast. Willard travels further and further into the heart of darkness. So this movie is classified as war action, but I would say it is also a horror film. But before we get into that, first, in terms of directing, Francis Ford Coppola, for our friends that aren't aware of his work, he directed The Godfather. He took over the 70s. And while The Godfather is one of the greatest movies of all time, I would say Apocalypse Now is Francis Ford Coppola's best work. Just the storytelling, the imagery, all the metaphors. It was so, so good. So this might just be the best war movie I've ever seen. It was breathtaking in terms of the cinematography. And as far as a war movie goes, I think Francis Ford Coppola just did a great job at displaying the true horror of Vietnam. So I think that's why it was kind of genius how this took over from a war movie into a horror movie, as they just keep going deeper into Vietnam. Because as we just follow the characters on their boat trip in order to find Marlon Brando's character, the movie just goes from a war film to full-on horror. I loved every second just in terms of a film aspect. I get that he was trying to show the true horrors of Vietnam and the horrors in a man's mind that had to go through that. But in just in terms of film, it was amazing. There was just more dread around every bend. As every scene we get deeper and deeper into finding Marlon Brando's character, it just got more and more horrifying. Speaking of horrifying, Marlon Brando, while he was not in the entire movie like Martin Sheen, he stole the show. He did a great job. He was subtly horrifying, and it just really shows the switch that flips in a man's mind when you're thrown into that state, because that's when really the horror aspect takes over. And speaking of horror, the last lines of the movie that they keep quoting at the end, Martin Sheen's character, he's our narrator, he keeps saying the horror, and that is basically our last line of this film. I think it's very chilling, and it makes this movie much more of a classic as it's described, because it really just shows Coppola's directing style. It's something that leaves you chilled, it leaves you with the goosebumps, it just makes you think about everything, it makes you think about more than just the horrors of Vietnam, but the psychological horror in a man's mind, especially after everything that they just witnessed on their journey to finding Marlon Brando's character. It was a stroke of genius. I think that this was a great movie. A few weeks ago, I actually just watched Come and See, and while that might be the greatest World War II movie, I think that Apocalypse Now overall is the best war movie. In terms of gore, I mean, it was definitely very violent. I would say Saving Private Ryan was more violent, except there was one scene at the end of Apocalypse Now that makes your stomach churn. Our animal lovers, maybe don't watch that part, but still a job well done. I think the cast did great. I haven't really seen anything of Martin Sheen, but he did a great job as our narrator and our lead. He just takes over. He just becomes increasingly more numb as this goes on. One prominent scene that I think shows off this example of how he just becomes more numb. I mean, yes, he is on a mission, but there's this scene in the movie where their Navy boat stops and sees a Vietnamese boat on their journey to finding Marlon Brando. Lawrence Fishburne's character shoots them all. At the end, they see that one of them is still alive. The rest of the Navy patrol wants to take her on a boat. Martin Sheen kills her, and they go on their way. He has a mission. He knows it. He keeps taking his patrol deeper into the jungle, where more chaos just unfolds. And like I said, I think he just becomes more numb to everything, even though he's on a mission. It just takes over in his mind. And they get put through the ringer at the end, too, when they're in, like, an indigenous tribe, Marlon Brando's area. It was amazing. The director's cut definitely is worth the three-hour watch. I think that's some of the best storytelling that you might see. It was just phenomenal, all the layers. This movie was an onion, for sure. So if you like a classic, this movie is worth your watch. It was amazing. I might have to watch it again at some point just because someone that appreciates a good movie, that's a phenomenal movie, hands down. Also, with Francis Ford Coppola's directing, as I was talking about with the other movies, he uses a lot of warmer tones, I would say, in the jungle. There's a lot of orangey, yellow, sunset-y, like, fire-like color schemes portrayed throughout the whole film while they're in the jungle. And then you're just descending further into darkness, and I think the color tones also show that as well. So that directing style with the color tones goes hand in hand with the storyline as they keep going deeper into madness. It was just great. There was a lot of thought out processes in that film, and that's why I think it deserves praise. Probably the best movie I watched this month, honestly. I loved Amadeus and all the other movies, but this was fantastic. It had me thinking about it for a while after. I'm going to have to go back to the library and rent it again because the library has the heat, I would say. They have a lot of good things, so thank you, library. But anyway, that wraps up this episode. Hopefully, I don't have to record this again as this is my third time recording this episode. We also have our video, so prayers that goes well for me. If not, it's a journey. We're just getting started. I see big things for Uncapped. So we're going to keep going. I mean, it's all about progress, and we're just going to keep at it. So if you listened to this whole episode, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this first episode of the Letterboxd series. We're going to do this at the end of every month. For the next few weeks, I would love to do like a musical adaptation episode talking about like Wicked, Mamma Mia, Sound of Music. I think that'll be fun for some of the demographic that listens to Uncapped. I'd love to do a Quentin Tarantino episode. I also just watched Indiana Jones for the first time, so I'd love to talk about that as a first-time Indiana Jones watcher. But again, thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode 6, and I'll see you then.